BBC News at 8 o'clock. The Prime Minister has set out his plans for creating a big society, describing it as the most dramatic redistribution of power from the state to individuals. The initiative is designed to encourage communities and voluntary groups to take over the running of some public services. Labour accused the government of abdicating its responsibilities. A group of American senators has written to David Cameron about allegations that BP lobbied the British government to free the Lockerbie bomber. The company's accused of pressing for the release of Abdel Basset al-Megrahi because it wanted to secure an oil contract with Libya. It denies this. The senators want to meet Mr. Cameron during his visit to Washington, which begins tomorrow. The US government has given BP a further 24 hours to test the new cap over its stricken well in the Gulf of Mexico. Since the cap was lowered onto the well to stop oil gushing into the sea last week, seepage has been detected from the seabed nearby. The fear is that what's leaking is methane gas, which could mean that oil is leaking too. A man who's almost totally paralyzed is taking legal action to clarify what would happen to his wife if she helped him to end his life. 56-year-old Tony Nicklinson from Wiltshire has what's known as locked-in syndrome after suffering a stroke. He can only swallow and move his head and eyes. His wife Jane says he wants his right to die to be recognised.
Tony wants to die, but he can't do it himself. He was such a larger-than-life character, and it's no quality of life for him. He's taken 5 years to come to this decision, and this is an individual thing. People will say, well, you know, you've got to protect the vulnerable, blah, 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 but protecting the vulnerable is at his expense.
A soldier killed in Afghanistan on Saturday has been named by the Ministry of Defence. He was Staff Sergeant Brett Linley, a bomb disposal expert in the Royal Logistic Corps. He was 29 and from Birmingham. BBC News.
Billions of dollars were pledged to help Haiti after the earthquake in January. Mark Doyle finds out what's really been happening on the ground in Crossing Continents in half an hour here on Radio 4. That's after It's My Story. Despite enormous advances in gay rights over the last 50 years, some older gay men and lesbians dread going to live in residential care or sheltered housing. Jane Hill presents Glad to be Grey. Contributors' names have been changed at their request.
I didn't come out to anybody because I was so scared, and I just came here and just kept my head down. I do worry here, as I say, there are one or two people I'm very, very wary of, and I don't feel safe, basically.
They turn their back, they don't come into the lift if I'm in the lift, they don't say good morning or good evening or anything, they just ignore me. They're homophobic. I know.
I don't actually really relish the thought of people knowing about my sexuality. The majority of them are in their 80s, so I'd imagine that'd be quite a difficult topic for them to comprehend, really, or discuss. It wasn't talked about in their earlier days.
Probably none of us relishes the prospect of having to move into residential care or sheltered housing when we grow older. But for many of Britain's gay and lesbian population, there is an additional worry. Thrown in with a group of complete strangers, how will other residents react? Will there be any members of staff you can turn to if you feel uncomfortable or unwelcome, or possibly worse? My partner and I talk about this quite often. Sometimes we use black humour. We say, well, we have to open our own residential home just so that we and our friends can live somewhere where we feel comfortable and accepted. All the gay people we've spoken to for this programme have lived very full lives. Joe is in his 70s. He's lived in sheltered housing now for 15 years.
I realised I was gay when I was 16, 17 in Italy. And it wasn't a nice time for me then. So I decided anyway, I must be a waiter, I must come away. So I went to an hotel school and then they sent me to England and I was very happy here. Oh, I went wild. Wild. Wild.
With men?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, only men. Wild. Well, I was young, and don't contradict me, because I know I've never been beautiful, but I was young. And if you are young, you've got the beauty of the donkeys, you know what I mean? And after a few years, I met this partner of mine, and I had the happiest life of my life. I was so happy with him. It was friendship, it was lover, it was everything, everything. And no days goes by now that I don't remember him. No, hardly any day, I won't say every day, but hardly any days goes by without I remember him. And that was my happiest time in my life. I thought I touched the sky with my finger. I really did.
I did play the field a bit, must admit. I was in a 10-year relationship with a lovely lady. Yeah, we got through 10 years somehow or another. I was with somebody else for 3 years. And that was my final passion. That was about 17 years ago now. So I think I always said that when I got to 40, that would be the end, because I suppose I should think that I was too old now to be desired. But I don't go anywhere. I don't socialise at all.
Linda is in her 60s. She's in sheltered accommodation now and living a quiet life. But it wasn't always like this.
I was always out, different clubs, the infamous and famous Gateways, which was a wonderful place, really wonderful place. Yeah, you rang a bell, went down quite a steep flight of stairs. It was quite dingy, dark, dingy in there. Lots of the girls, women wore suits and shirts and ties, you know, and the women wore dresses and skirts or tops. Yeah, that was quite pronounced. There was a wonderful lady that owned it. She used to sit at the bar with a very feminine lady with a cigarette holder and directing it all from this one seat. Yeah. It was, get that one out, don't like the look of that, running in that first thing. And her partner, it's a Canadian lady, very, very masculine, very nice. So she did a throwing out. It was a fantastic time, you know, really fantastic. Lots of parties, and we travelled everywhere to go to a party. You heard the party and you scribbled the address down, but you found the place. It was amazing, actually.
Eleanor is in her late 60s. She came out relatively late in life, after getting married and having children.
Now, this isn't a mess, because I've been out today doing things. I do dressmaking. This is my granddaughter's prom dress.
And you made this?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. It's grey and silver with a green bow on the front. That's absolutely beautiful. And I'm afraid you are going to have to explain to me which fabrics, because there's a mixture of fabrics in this, I think.
It's satin with organza.
Once I'd sort of admitted myself that I was a lesbian, it took me a few years to sort of just peel layers away. And then when I was 50, I just sort of went for it. Everything was ready. Just like a teenager, like we all do.
And did you feel, age 50, that you were quite happy by then in your own skin and you could be who you were? There were no restrictions in society. You were free to live your life finally the way that you should have been living it all along.
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate in that I was living in Manchester. I was living and working in Manchester. We used to go to Pride and take all our second-hand clothes along and have a stall at Pride.
Annual gay pride events are now a permanent fixture across the country and an important part of the calendar for so many LGBT people, lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender. Mary's life was very different. A retired social worker, she grew up in the countryside and never really came out as gay.
I remember particularly I couldn't dance. That's just another thing I couldn't do. Went to lessons and I got absolutely smitten with this dancing teacher. In fact, just even telling you now makes me laugh about it. She got the most fantastic feet, an instep like you've never seen. I thought she was the most glamorous creature I'd ever seen, and indeed she was. And I was, you know, terribly jealous when she didn't dance with me, because that was part of going to the lesson, wasn't it? Then I think the next thing was I remember reading avidly The Well of Loneliness. I was gripped by this, absolutely gripped by this book, and I guess I knew.
Radcliffe Hall's 1928 work is one of the earliest English novels with an overtly lesbian theme. After reading that book, Mary went on to meet the woman she was to spend most of her adult life with.
We got together and stayed together for a good many years, 40-odd years, in fact. She was musical, which I wasn't, but I enjoyed that side of things. The other side was that she really was a very good potter, and she potted with leading potters. We then did some sheep farming, and that was, you know, we had a country place. That was enormous fun, learnt a great deal, and it was our great pride to keep all these sheep alive, however old they were, and to lamb them and lamb successfully. But we had to be careful, and it was a period in life when, I mean, professionally, you had to be very careful. But also, I think we were very discreet.
And for many older gay people, discretion was a way of life.
So you were together for 17 years, but in all that time, you pretended, both of you, to all your friends, that you were essentially just flatmates.
Yes.
And is that what lots of gay men did at the time? That's what society, you felt, forced you to do?
Oh, yes. It was very undercover, because England, if you are gay, is difficult. There is homophobia in England, but it's worse in Italy. Much worse, much worse, much worse.
No, I always tried to be as absolutely discreet as possible, because it was rather silly not to be, because there were always queer bashers around. And, of course, I was a mother as well, so you have to be ultra-careful.
So with vigilance often a feature of an older gay person's younger years, once they move into a care home or sheltered accommodation, they feel they have to be careful all over again.
I'm quite involved in what's going on here because I help with coffee mornings and things like that, and obviously the garden. But I just didn't tell anybody. I just thought, I can't cope. I didn't tell the scheme manager or anybody at all. So it felt like a double life. Because as soon as I moved here, I started looking for what was going on around and got involved in various things. But I'd come back and couldn't tell anybody where I was going or what I was doing. And to a certain extent, it's still like that. I sometimes hear homophobia, so there's just no way I'm going to come out to them.
There is a very good social life if you choose to participate in it. But I'm sure I will. Broaden social life a bit more when the time's right. If something came up about homosexuality, then I would talk about it. I probably wouldn't talk about myself personally, because, you know, I would be worried about the reaction. I'll be honest about that. Hard to deal with, isn't it? There's people are negative towards you, not hostile even.
Mary and her partner led a very happy life in a small community where they felt their relationship was never scrutinised. But Mary felt more anxious once they had to start dealing with institutional care.
She became ill, and it meant moving to get treatment. And during the remainder of her life here, which was about 6 years, some of it spent in our own apartment and some of it spent in a residential, partly nursing home, until she died in the home. I didn't feel totally relaxed in terms of showing affection and that sort of thing. At a certain level, yes, but I think that may say something, perhaps not only about the staff, but also about us. We were very used to being discreet, being very private people. So I know it isn't only what I felt. I knew that she minded. And on one or two occasions, when she was really pretty ill, she had said to me, if I, say, leant over to kiss her before I was going or something, she might say, be careful. And I knew, I could see how anxious she was about it, because I think there was still a residual anxiety about how that would be received. And I think that was, from previous time in life when, you know, we always had been careful.
Age UK runs a scheme for older lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people which helps to tackle the problem of isolation. Nick Maxwell and Stacey Halls are part of the Opening Doors scheme.
Within the membership that we currently have, one of the problems we find that is a really big stumbling block for the project is identifying people that are very isolated within care home type communities. It's very hard to promote the service to people that are physically less mobile, who don't go out, can't see our brochures, can't see where we're advertising. So the experience that we have is more kind of anecdotal or secondhand stories of people specifically within a care home environment.
This historically is a group of people, a group of men and women who are so used to keeping themselves to themselves, keeping their heads down, not creating any disturbance, not drawing attention, that they've become, in their older years, they've become so isolated now that they don't engage.
While some older gay people stay in the closet because they fear negative reactions, others have had experiences in care settings which reinforce those anxieties.
When I first needed carers here, for a whole year I've had problems, and, you know, carers who told me they thought it'd be rather nice if I had a man friend. I had one in particular who, she wouldn't come in the bathroom. I need help with showering. She wouldn't come in and showered me at arm's length.
There's one chap, he contacted me, was absolutely terrified, wouldn't have the newsletter that we reproduce, a monthly newsletter, wouldn't have that delivered, even though obviously brown envelope, da-da-da-da-da, wouldn't have that delivered for fear of being outed. But in his head, he thought he had been outed by somebody who was visiting him, had made a connection with somebody else. And it's very much this element of hearsay, and I'm not really sure whether I've been outed or not. So he spent months being paranoid about the whole thing, where one day it was actually sort of more or less confirmed for him. He was sat in the day room and one of the other women residents got up and turned the television channel over to something else, sat down, and as she sat down beside him, looked him in the face and said, "I'm not watching anything that queers made."
The Social Care Institute for Excellence is an independent charity funded by the Department of Health. It aims to identify and promote best practice in all aspects of social care throughout the UK. Robert Templeton is the head of Transforming Adult Social Care at the Institute.
I think the difficulty quite often, and when I started in social care as a care worker, you start with no training, so you don't have any idea of different backgrounds, and you end up using your own value base to judge your own judgments. And the difficulty there then is that you have people who are often low paid, who have very different expectations of how care should be provided and the types of people you'd be caring for, and immediately wouldn't make that link perhaps to someone who is older and maybe gay or lesbian or bisexual. And the survey of 400 care providers, only 9% of those had carried out any equality work on sexual orientation. And by contrast, a third of those same organisations had done so for race and disability. So it's something that really isn't in the consciousness, perhaps, of care providers.
What about legislation? What legislation is there to protect people?
Well, there has been legislation and regulations The Equality Act of 2010, which will be implemented on the 1st of October, requires equal treatment in access to employment as well as private and public services, regardless of gender, race, disability, and importantly, sexual orientation, transgender status, belief or age. There will be an extension in legislation that allows lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people really to have very similar rights to people who have disabilities and racial discrimination, and really brings that into that sort of area. And before, they've really felt quite marginalised on the edge of things.
We all know the extent to which the care service is stretched. Mm. Is it actually realistic that any of us in our old age can expect to have exactly all the right boxes ticked?
I don't think we can get it exactly right, but what we need to do is ensure that people can make choices, and we can model we can make an adjustment within our services that meets those people's needs. And we might not always manage to get a gay carer or someone on religious grounds, but we make sure that people are aware of that person's backgrounds and beliefs and are respectful to it, and we'll make every adjustment they can to enable people to live the lives that they want.
Care homes in England are regulated by the Care Quality Commission. Neither the CQC nor the Department of Health was able to offer anyone for interview for this programme. But the Department of Health did issue a statement in which it said, "Care homes are bound by equalities legislation in the same way as any other provider of services. The regulator, the Care Quality Commission, registers and regulates care homes under the Care Standard Act 2000. The department is introducing new registration requirements, under which the CQC will register adult social care providers under the Health and Social Care Act 2008. Failure to comply with these requirements will be an offence. When I spoke to Nick Maxwell from Age UK, I asked him why the legislation isn't working.
Fear of doing the wrong thing in many respects. Staff don't know what to do, therefore they ignore it. If it's left unchallenged, then it sort of creates this homophobic atmosphere where the older LGBT person feels this space isn't for me. This is yet another space that isn't for me. Therefore, I needn't bother coming along. I needn't bother sitting in the day room anymore. I'll just lock myself away in the room, and this is me for the rest of my remaining years, locking myself in the room, not talking to anybody. Or desperately trying, wanting to do the right thing. I mean, one of the things that we actually get asked oftentimes is, I think I might have an older gay man in the service. I think I might have an older lesbian in the service. How do I go about approaching them? And it's like, well, actually, you don't necessarily target that one individual. Because even if you've got it right and you've actually got yourself your target audience of an older gay man or an older lesbian, the fact that you're giving them a leaflet specifically on a lesbian and gay service, they feel that they're going to be targeted and accused. Oh no, I've been outed again, and I've spent my entire life sort of chasing this. So one of the pieces of advice that we give, a lot of services will have a welcome pack that they give to everybody. And it's about putting the information leaflet into all of those packs. It could well be that there's a range of services, perhaps a Bengali elders group, as well as sort of there's a lesbian and gay group here. And just going through the range of services, these are the services that we offer to everybody coming through the door. And as often as not, I've actually had social workers contact me later to say, that worked.
What about people who would say, this is all bleeding hearts? Lots of people go into care homes with different needs. They may be disabled, they may be a member of an ethnic minority. Everyone is different, everyone has needs that ought to be catered for, both in terms of legislation and in terms of just how we treat each other as human beings. Why should lesbian and gay people feel that they have even greater needs than other groups?
Within the LGBT community, you will also have people that come from various backgrounds in terms of, you will have people with disabilities, you will have people with from various ethnic backgrounds, from different nationalities. The one thing that I think we tend to miss, or the thing that gets swept under the carpet, tends to be the sexuality aspect, because there's this overriding idea that sexuality is about sexual acts. It's your sexuality is simply about what should happen within the confines of your own bedroom. Sexual acts are, of course, private. Sexuality is not. Everyone has certain expressions of who they are as an individual, and your sexuality, you do have ways of expressing that publicly.
I spoke to one lady who was explaining that someone in authority had said to her, well, we treat everyone equally. That's what we do. And someone listening to this might think, well, surely that's the right way forward. Surely everyone should be treated the same. Why should lesbian and gay people be seen as a subset? Why should they want special privileges, as some people might see it? Actually, could it not be a positive thing that, for example, a member of staff in a care home, their instant reaction is to say, well, we treat everyone the same? Because actually, they should be doing that, shouldn't they?
Well, if in treating everyone the same, you were actually achieving equality, that would be one thing. But I think we know that if you were to treat absolutely every member of society in exactly the same fashion, you will de facto be discriminating against huge portions of the population. If you were to say, well, we'll treat people who have access mobility issues exactly the same way as fully able-bodied people, well, we wouldn't have access, or people wouldn't be able to access buildings, they wouldn't be able to get around. You would be discriminating against that person by saying, we're going to treat you exactly the same way as absolutely anybody else. So we do treat people differently based on their individual circumstances in order to have equal access. That's all we're saying here. And where facts and figures and statistics, I think, can come across as quite bland, there has been some research where there are differences between
the ageing LGBT community and their heterosexual counterparts, older LGBT people are twice as likely to live alone. They're 2.5 times as likely to have no children or family around them to provide even some of the kind of basic familial responsibilities and care provision that a lot of people would enjoy. And the statistic that gets me every time I actually have to say it, 20% of older LGBT people in a survey said they had absolutely nobody, not a single person to call upon in a time of crisis. That is 10 times higher than the national average.
Jo has a very personal opinion as to what the solution might be.
We need a shelter housing only for gay men, because I guess I would feel free, freer, if we were all gay.
My name is Rodolphe Martreuil, and colleagues of mine and myself have been trying for nearly 2 years now to raise funds in order to build what we believe to be the first homoaffirmative retirement care home in the UK. Homoaffirmativity is a kind of made-up word, although it is not mine, that defines the providing of services particularly tailored to the needs of the LGBT population. It goes back to the concept of heterosexism, which basically assumes you're heterosexual. So when you come in, when you register at a care home, you're asked, who is your husband or wife whom we should call? You know, what is your next of kin? These are not judgmental questions by themselves, but they clearly show the gay person coming in there that this is not an environment which is aware of the gay and lesbian issue. And already it puts them on the defensive and puts them in an environment where they are going to be cautious. People feel at risk of being bullied or ostracized if they come out in the care home environment, and as a result they go back in the closet, and you just do not know that these people are here. They are, but it is not known. By making our message known, I very much hope to be able to work with other care homes so that the message can get out. Those people who are secretly unhappy in that home can move, regardless of the quality of the service that is delivered. And the quality of care is a separate element from the cultural element which we're trying to put in.
But care homes specifically for gay people raises many questions. Isn't that creating a ghetto? And where would it stop?
I think we have in the care industry a tendency to deprive people of their own choices, by and large. They are our customers. They are over 18 and able to make their own decisions, and therefore it will be their own decision. Segregation and the self-segregation is a matter that is already occurring. I mean, there are Polish care homes, for instance. It is the way of life. You mix with the people you get on with. And we see no issue with this at all.
Do you see signs that things are improving gradually? I'm 41. If I'm in a care home in 40 years from now, do you think and believe that my experience might be very different to what you witnessed through your work today in 2010?
I think simply because there's more of a dialogue around these issues, the hope would be, I mean, I certainly can't see into the future, but the fact that we are talking about the issues now, I suspect 20 years ago, nobody was really openly talking about these issues and how to cater for the LGBT community in any way. So that in and of itself is a positive move forward and hopefully will help set up the choices that all people deserve to enjoy as they age. It's about making people comfortable, preserving people's dignity, allowing people to just have the choices that they deserve and want for themselves, so that the generations that come behind, once again, they're paving the way, so that as people who are in our 20s, 30s, 40s, moving in that direction, hopefully something will put in place because they've again struggled through and built a path that will lead to a much, much more positive housing situation.
I've been involved with all sorts of struggles. You know, the personal is the political thing. And I know alongside a lot of my other friends who are involved now, we're saying we're tired, you know, we'd like this done for us.
Lesbian and gay people of my age may have reason to be very grateful to Eleanor's generation. Our options for care in our older years may be far greater than those that exist today.
We've got to an age where we now have another personal thing, which is we're ageing and looking towards our accommodation, our care, possibly going into a care home, or almost inevitably going into a care home eventually. And we're still part of the struggle, we're still part of the fight. And I can play hide and seek with my fears.
Glad to be Grey was presented by Jean Hill and produced in Bristol by Sally Heaven. And this programme is Radio 4's podcast Choice of the Week. Details on all our podcasts can be found at the Radio 4 website. In a few moments, Crossing Continents finds out how Haiti is coping 6 months after the earthquake hit.
More and more today, we're involved in ethical dilemmas concerning our medical treatment.
Returning to BBC Radio.